right here, right now, brought to you by Right Choice Services. Right Choice Services develops individualized programs to help clients find that book inside of them that they've always wanted to write. On Right Here, Right Now, we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the writing they engage in as part of their work. I'm Vanessa Lowry, and I'm sharing the hosting chair with Dr. Tim Morrison today. Good morning, Dr. Tim.
Good morning, Vanessa. Boy, I had to shut my mouth fast. I was already with, good morning, Mrs. You did well.
Well, it would have been okay if we did a double good morning at the same time. That wouldn't have been a bad thing. Well, it's great to be here with you this morning. And we've also got our co-host and producer for Right Here, Right Now, Kevin Finn. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Vanessa. It's great to see you.
Great to see you. Kevin is produces for us, but he also hosts several shows on Business Radio X. So it's got a full studio this morning. And today we've got an exciting show. We're talking with guests David Cohen and Brian Johnson about what makes them go wahoo and how they've created businesses that have more to have more wahoo in their lives. Let's learn together how they share these experiences through writing and more. We're going to start with David. David Cohen is the owner of Equation Arts. He works with small business owners on strategy and marketing to help them find the awesome edge to their business. And he's writing a book about it. David also hosts the weekly radio show Be a Beacon. Welcome, David.
Good morning. How you doing?
Great. It's great to have you here with us this morning.
It's great to be here.
Well, and on your you're welcome. On your website, you talk about being a brand therapist. Can you tell me what that means?
Sure. Well, actually, it came the term from a client. I was working with a fellow who runs a small software company, and my style is very conversational when I'm working closely with a client. So I ask a lot of very probing questions. And I try to get them to sort of run the tape back and get to the sources of how they approach things, some of the patterns they build on. And so it was through that process, the client just kind of in the middle of it burst out, you know what you are, David? And he used the term business therapist, but I adapted that to brand therapist. And that was about 4 years ago, and it stuck. So that's where the term came from. But it's really about taking your approach to your marketing and your business story right down to the underlying roots. And I think that's where the therapy comes in, is let's get that out, let's get that surfaced so you can build the rest of your story from a very authentic place.
And build a good base from it. That's great.
Exactly.
So what types of clients do you enjoy working with?
I enjoy working with all kinds of clients, and I've had the good fortune to work with some interesting folks, creative people like photographers, artists, ceramicists, image consultants, radio DJs, and I've worked with some corporate clients, companies that do software and things in the field of energy retailing, and so it's a pretty diverse crowd. I think that's what keeps it very fun and interesting for me. It's always a new set of issues coming into the...
Well, and I know you've been involved in several different businesses. So I'm curious how you've been able to morph your business into one that really makes you go wahoo.
Well, yeah, thank you. Coming out of the gate, I sort of did what I think a lot of entrepreneurs do. You do what you know, what you kind of start from this position where you're calling people you already know. You're trying to do things that stay in a safe environment that you feel comfortable with. And for me, I had spent a lot of time in the technology world. So I had been involved in a couple startups and some things involved with wireless and communication from a software application level. And so I thought, well, branding and marketing, those folks need a lot of help. But I found that I was really not enjoying it very much. And not necessarily getting a lot of traction with companies that I thought should have been easy targets. And I found it was sort of a dual situation. The ones that seemed to need it the most really didn't appreciate it very much or value it very much. And I found that what I gravitated towards is I liked working with small businesses where the owner really defines the scene because I felt I was more impactful. And you know, the funny thing about it is as you kind of get involved in something, you start to realize I have all these presuppositions of what I think I'm supposed to be doing. It's time to start listening to what's working and where the opportunities are and reshape around that. And then I found I was having a lot more fun. I was working with more of the kinds of clients that I wanted to work with. And the reputation that I was building was much better once I started doing that. So funny how that works.
Well, and I think it's interesting that your background, you actually have a degree in fine arts.
That's
and
right.
then you've, you know, done all these different businesses and worked in technology. So I on your website, you talk about this service that you offer that's called Doodles to Noodle. So I would love for you to explain a little bit about how that works and what clients get from that service.
Sure. Well, Doodles to Noodles was kind of born from the fact that I do a lot of drawing, and I have, as you mentioned, a diverse background. I call myself a mutt. I have a math and art education. I've spent a lot of time in startups, as I mentioned, but I've also been involved in public companies. So I have this very diverse set of things that, and I said, well, you know, how can I bring some of my passions together? And I had this idea for an experimental service which blended sort of the coaching aspect that came out of the brand therapy work with some of the drawings that I do. And you're probably familiar with the idea of like a vision board. Vision boards, something, you know, tool people will use to try and get a sense of who they are and what they want, and use the visual tools to draw things out of their subconscious that they may not necessarily easily verbalize. So what I do is I spend about 90 minutes with a client probing in a very kind of deep way. I try to do what I call structured listening to bring out things from within them. And then I channel that into my drawings. I call them doodles because they're very whimsical in their style. And the net result is we get a somewhat aspirational set of drawings that reflect a lot of things that come from the inner self of that business owner. And the result is they get sort of a talisman that they can keep with them to really remind them of what they're heading towards, what they value, and who they are when they're being at their best. And you know, for the few folks I've done this with, the reaction has just been amazing. Very emotional, very exciting. So it's a new thing, but it's a lot of fun. So thanks.
Well, and
for
I know different people process things differently. So mm-hmm. some people are very auditory, and some people are kinesthetic, and some people are very visual. So I could see where, you know, for the right clients, that could be such a great reminder at a glance of, oh, that's right, that's what we talked about.
Right.
And then here's a visual reminder of what we came up with in this brainstorming session.
And that's exactly how it functions. So they get a lot out of that session time, but then they have this sort of ongoing thing that can always take them back to that place and that mode of thought. And I think that's why the reaction is so strong when they see the final pieces.
So, David, I'm curious what kind of writing you engage in for your business or for your clients.
Well, you know, it's a lot of different stuff. For the business, you know, I maintain a blog. Sometimes I'm pairing things with the drawings I do. Obviously, newsletter and some of those tools, which I think are very important to keep a stream of communication out there. You want people to welcome you into their inbox, into their world, just so they remember who you are and where to find you if they need you or if they run into someone who needs you. But for the clients, I often get involved in what I call strategic writing, working on positioning statements, mission and vision, and for want of a better term, building block documents, things that take identifiable patterns, behaviors, values that the business owner is bringing out through our discussions, and helping them create a context, a glossary, your vocabulary, if you will. And they can use those when they're giving a pitch. They can use those when they're thinking about new copy for their website. And the whole idea is the better they understand the structure behind their story, the more articulate they become, the more confident they become with it, and actually starts to guide some of their choices. So the writing there is very important to help, you know, create that relationship for them with their own content.
Well, and I find this with the clients I work with, too, is sometimes they've written a lot of things, but it's so wordy and it's so much that they aren't able to really use it. So being able to pare it down into the words that make the most difference for them is really a key strategy to help
keep
that focus.
Some people have a hard time getting past the menu to the story. You know, they list the items or the services and things that they do, and they think that it's going to be all self-evident, that people are going to understand that just by glancing at it. And really, unfortunately, what they haven't done is established a reason why someone should care yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what I try to do is help find that story that's going on behind that, so that, you know, and I use the tree as a metaphor. If you establish a good solid trunk, then you can branch off into a lot of different directions. And those branches may be products and services and things you could explore, but they all relate back to something, to a central place. If you're all branches, if you're just the twigs and branches and no trunk, then you're a tumbleweed and you're just kind of getting, you know, you might get lucky and something connects once, but then you just drift on. And so you need that kind of foundation to really establish who you are. And that way, as, you know, economies change, technologies change, your principles change a lot slower. So your products and services can shift, yet your brand can have continuity beyond those. But if the brand is all about those endpoints, then the brand has struggle every time there's a shift out there.
Right. Well, and I know when we had coffee a couple months ago, you mentioned to me that you've been working on a book that's about helping people find that awesome edge in their business, which will make them go wahoo. So can you tell us a little bit about what that book's going to be about?
Sure. Well, it really starts with something that I call the awful to awesome graph. And it's the world's simplest graph. It's a single horizontal line. You can jot it down on a piece of paper right now. And the whole idea is you put the word awful on one end and the word awesome on the other. And then you got to think to yourself, well, what does that term awful mean to me? And, you know, we all have our own personal definition of what's awful in our work, what we wouldn't want to do, where we really hate to spend our time. And then we have our own definition of awesome. And it's going to be a little bit different for everybody. It's going to be a little bit different for any entrepreneur out there. But the better you understand what comprises those things, it gives you a starting point. And then the idea is think about the activities over the last couple of years, what you have been doing, where have you been saying yes, where have you had the opportunity to say yes, which I think is a big way to start to understand how effective your brand is, and put a dot on the graph for every one of those incidents. And are all your dots clustering around awful? Well, then maybe it's time for a career change. Maybe you got to do some serious revamping. If it's all around awesome, well, congratulations. Your brand and your message are actually bringing you a lot of the opportunity you want. There may be some polishing of the apple to do, but you're in good shape. But a lot of folks find themselves, it's a little dot here, it's a dot there, it's all over the place. Maybe it's clustered in the middle, which would be, you know, what's halfway between awful and awesome? Well, adequate.
Yeah.
And who wants to
boring.
Build, yeah, who wants to build an adequate brand?
Right.
But what it's also telling you, because you're looking over a length of time, is that's what you're reinforcing. If you're over and over doing things that land you in that kind of semi-satisfactory land of adequate, you're building and reinforcing your brand right around that center. And that says, you know, either you have to reevaluate what you consider awesome and go with the market momentum, which, you know, the bigger the company, the more likely you're going to go that path. But for a lot of people who are in it for themselves, you know, there's a saying, I didn't quit my day job just to do a job that I don't like anymore. So it says, you got to do something about this. There's a gap. You got to shift it. You know, it's right here on paper. It's not my words. It's your own discovery. But let's talk about how you can make that change. And those are some of the folks I have the most fun working with.
Well, and that is one of the advantages of small businesses. You do have more flexibility to be able to make faster shifts so that you can make those adjustments to create the more awesome things in your business and in your life.
Exactly.
So, David, I know you have a radio show that's called Be a Beacon.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of people do you interview on that show?
I get awesome people like your next guest who's coming up. But I like to get in entrepreneurs, folks who are maybe doing something a little bit different or have discovered something in their journey. You know, I've had, you know, graphic facilitators. I've had artists, I've had some folks who do coaching, different things, but all had in common this idea is they saw a path for themselves that was a little bit different. They found their niche and they made it work. And it wasn't always a smooth ride. And I try to get them to share some of the real story behind that, because I think that's interesting. And I think that's what's inspiring for folks whether you're, you know, dealing with an issue in your own business, and you say, how can I get through this? Well, you know, I heard this story that someone made it through something similar. Or, you know, you're in a corporation and you're thinking about starting a business, but you're not sure, you know, what's it going to take and can you do it? You know, maybe one of these stories says, well, if they made their crazy idea work, maybe I can make my crazy idea work.
Yeah.
And I really like that idea. So that's some of the fun of Be a Beacon.
Well, and I always love to learn from awesome people that are loving what they do because it inspires me to just keep moving forward.
This is where we go, wahoo!
That's right. It makes me want to go wahoo. So that's awesome. So, David, I appreciate you being with us. Dr. Tim, do you have any questions for David before we talk to Brian?
No questions. Just want to comment that it's been a delight, excuse me, listening to you because my older son has a degree in fine arts, graphic design, and he works as a design engineer.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm watching you, listening to you, and thinking, there's my son in a few years doing the same kind of thing because now he's the operations manager for a manufacturing company.
Yeah, you never know where that's going to take you. And I think that creative grounding that you get in a fine arts background
exactly.
is, you know, in this day and age, so valuable. The world has really kind of shifted in that respect.
Are you going to illustrate your book?
There will be drawings.
With the doodles for noodles?
Absolutely.
Good. I'm looking forward to that one.
Well, and I think businesses of every size are creativity is something that really is valued now. So any way you can bring that into your work experience benefits you down the road.
Well, you know, I think it's become a noisier and noisier world, and access to information is a two-way street. So we have more opportunity than ever before to get to information, but the flip side of that is you're up against the whole world, and how are you going to stand out? How are you going to put something unique and interesting on that? And that's why I always say play for authenticity, play for your unique strengths. And context, I think, is a really other important concept, is put yourself where you can be valued and understood for where your strengths are. It's not just about what your differences are. Every difference needs to be placed in a context, you know, the sweet spot of the racket, if you will.
Absolutely.
You know, all four of us in this room, well, five, I don't know Kevin that well, but I know the four of us have degrees or training in areas other than what we are actually working in. And it's just getting that education, going for the sweet spot, going for that awesome.
Yeah.
Because I know the ugly.
Yeah. And it's also about resilience. You know, if you're grounded in what you truly think is awesome, in your true passions and in your true values, well, then on the tough days, you got something to pull you through.
Yeah.
If you're trying to do what everyone else says you should, but it's not really meaningful for you, it's hard to carry through when you hit the rough times. And no business out there, you know, succeeds without hitting some rocky patches. We all do.
Absolutely. Well, David, tell our listeners how they can find out more about you and about Equation Arts and Doodles for Noodles.
Well, it's real easy. EquationArts.com is sort of my home online, but I try to make myself fairly visible. So if you look up David S. Cohen on LinkedIn, you can find me there. David S. Cohen on Facebook, you can find me there. David S. Cohen on Twitter. I will tweet occasionally. You know, the Be a Beacon show is every Monday at 10:30 Eastern time. I use Blog Talk Radio. And you can just go to blogtalkradio.com and look up David Cohen or Be a Beacon. Or, of course, there's a link from equationarts.com. And that's equation like a math equation and arts, plural, .com.
Excellent. Well, David, if you can hang out with us, we're going to give you a preview of your guest that's going to be in a few weeks.
Awesome.
So we've got our next guest is Robert Brian Johnson. He's the owner of JCAT General Contractors and Maintenance. First creating fictional stories rooted in his experiences as a serial entrepreneur, Brian recently published his first novel, Into the Black. The book is published under his full name, Robert Brian Johnson. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's wonderful to have you here. And I know that you have also been involved in several startups that I think were more technology-based before you started JCAT, mm-hmm. which is a totally different industry.
Mm-hmm.
So what about the construction industry makes you go wahoo?
Ever since I was a child, that was the thing that I wanted to do more than anything, was to be in construction. My family was in the development business as I was growing up, and so I cannot tell you how many times I was sitting in the truck with my dad on a construction site watching men, you know, on a out there in the mud bringing a building up out of the ground, wishing I was out there with them. And as David was talking earlier, I originally chose a path that had me in a suit and tie and air conditioning for years and years and years, and did fine in that. I was in my early 30s, and I was miserable. I was a vice president of a company based out of Denver, and commuting each week. And someone said, "Well, if you could do anything." Anything at all, no boundaries, no rent to pay, no mortgage, no kids to feed, nothing. What would you do? I said, I'd own a small construction company. I mean, just like that. And so I had started two companies prior to this. I'd been a partner in two previous startups. So I understood the fluid nature of and the difficulties in starting a company. I knew what that was like. I don't recommend it for most people, but because I'd had these two previous experiences, granted they were in the technology sector, but they were very much a startup business role. I sat down at the kitchen table. I wrote a business plan. I did got out. This was back when we still used Yellow Pages, so I started making phone calls and did some due diligence, and then. On June 3rd of 2003, started JCAT. That was 9.5 years ago.
Well, and I know you identified a very specific niche for JCAT, too.
Right.
So that's helped create something for your business to thrive in a time that most construction businesses in the Atlanta area are not doing so well.
Yeah. Oddly, we found a soft spot in the market. I think so many general contractors either want to be home builders or they want to really build big buildings. And we wanted to do neither. I certainly didn't want to be a home builder. And, we found a very soft market in smaller projects, and it worked out well for us because the financing moves much more quickly when you're managing smaller projects. You're in and out. You get paid quickly. Everything moves better. No one gets upset over smaller amounts of money, and when you get up into serious dollars, then people get a little more narrow-minded and sometimes a lot more narrow-minded about deadlines different things impacting the project.
Well, and cash flow is a big thing for any business, so being able to be paid quicker is a huge thing.
Absolutely correct.
So what got you interested in writing?
Oh, gosh. I wrote short stories my whole life. I mean, back to when I was a child, I remember writing short stories. And they had no rhyme or reason. They had no meaning. They were just quirky, funny stories. They almost always revolved around something that had happened to me or had happened to one of my friends or one of my family members. And they were either funny or touching or maybe both. I never journaled or kept a diary. And so I have a lot more freedom writing short stories because I don't let the facts get in the way of telling a good story. I would write these stories, and then I would just make them a little funnier than actually what happened in real life, or make them, turn it one way or the other. So,
well, and you're a great storyteller. I mean, some of the stories you've told me when we've had coffee almost had me crying because they had me laughing so hard. So I can see where you can pull from those experiences.
Like I said, you don't ever want to let the facts get in the way of telling a good story.
Well, and I first met you through Dr. Tim when you were in the midst of writing your novel.
That's right.
And I thought that it was so interesting that you kind of pulled from your experiences to tell this fictional story. So how did that translate?
Well, I had a business coach, not unlike David, a guy named Kirk Bogue, who had worked with me for a couple of years. And it was one of the things on my list that I wanted to do was to see if I could actually write an actual novel. Because I'd written so many short stories, I had hundreds and hundreds of pages of just nonsense, silly little stories. And so Kirk Bogue introduced me to Tim Morrison. And so I met Tim, and Tim likes to tell this story. I show up to meet Tim for the first time. I have two binders. Now, these are not small one-inch binders. These are both four-inch binders. I have two of them. I have probably 600 pages of two reams of paper that I have here. Three-hole punch, and they're just...
And you said, help me turn this into
a random stories, yeah. And so Tim was a bit overwhelmed.
We were at the OK Cafe.
That's right.
In the back, and he hands his stuff to me, and
he wheels it in on the hand cart.
On the dolly. That's right.
Sort of like that. We
had
to get
some
of
my
booth.
Men bring it in. Those trucks that beep, you know, when they back up. Beep, beep.
But it was amazing stuff. Brian is so self-effacing. And that's one of the things you just learn. He is good. He just is good, and he won't take ownership of it. But
Tim is being very generous. I made Tim read a few of these stories to see if it had any legs, or if Tim was going to gently say, "You need to stick with building things, son." But some of the stories that. I think I gave you three or four stories, and I think three of the four didn't make the book.
That's right.
Yeah.
I kept looking for them, and they weren't there.
The stories aren't there, yeah. Like I was saying, they were totally almost random, the stories were. So from there, I created an outline, gave a little more meat and potatoes, I guess, to the bones of what I was trying to create. And I met with Tim several times over the course of a year, and he would review the outline, and he knew ultimately what I was trying to accomplish. And then Tim does a great job of, there are two different things that Tim does that he's really gifted at. One is what I call thematic work, which is helping you make sure that the theme that you want to kind of weave like a ribbon through your story is able, even though the reader might forget about it, It comes back stronger later, and they're reminded, oh, yeah, I remember this now. And so he does a very good job of seeing from the perspective of the forest and being able to weave those themes all the way through the book. And then the other thing he does is say, well, this comma right here is out of place. This should be a semicolon instead of a comma. And that kind of tactical help is it's unusual to find that and someone that can see the thematic work. It's two different frames of mind.
Right.
And Tim does a great job of managing both of those pieces at the same time. I got the book finished December of 2011. I was telling Tim knows this already. I'm like Rain Man about setting goals. This is the way I grew up, so I don't know how to live a life then you don't have goals that you actively are pursuing. So December 31 was one of my goals, and I got it done, and I got it over to Tim. The whole thing was finished, and I grotesquely underestimated the amount of editing that was still going to be necessary over the next 6 to 9 months. And so the book was released in December of last year. So it took almost 11 full months to get it from, okay, I'm done. I don't have anything else to do to now I'm really done. And
right.
I still have something to do with it. I read it the other day and I thought, shh, I gotta fix that.
Yeah, but that's when you have to say, and as you did, it's already done. It's out there, and you have to know when to quit. But the other thing I want to add to that is that Brian wants it to be so good that is why he was willing to have the work done. And he didn't just stop with me. You had friends that you trusted to read the story. But the most amazing thing is your wife never read it while you were writing it. Has she read it yet?
No.
He
no,
won't
no.
let her.
No,
he won't let her
no,
read
no,
it.
No, 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 no.
But he was telling me before we went on air that he read it to his daughters,
right.
He won't let his wife read it.
That's right. I made her leave the room. I wouldn't let her hang around.
Well, and you've actually gotten some really impressive testimonials from folks, including Tom Ziegler, who's the son of Zig Ziegler.
Yeah.
So what kinds of things are people saying about the book, or what kinds of things could the reader expect when they read your book?
I was telling you earlier, I got a great blurb from Kip Marlowe, who hosts the radio program. Kip sent me an email, says, "Atlas Shrugged is no longer my favorite book. This is this is Atlas Shrugged on steroids for a present day reading or something like that." So that was a huge endorsement. I'm a big Ayn Rand fan, and so to have someone that is it's also an objectivist and Ayn Rand fan, I was quite an endorsement. But yeah, we've got Dale Carnegie and Zig Ziglar has endorsed it, Bob Butler. I always do that. I know a friend of mine named Bob Butler. I meant to say Alan Butler. Forgive me. You know Alan. Alan read it and enjoyed it. So.
And Wendy Johnson, who heads up the Dale Carnegie,
that's right,
here in Atlanta.
In Georgia. That's right. She's president of the Dale Carnegie chapter in the state of Georgia. Yeah, and she read it and liked it and wrote some very kind words about it. And then Jeffrey Small is a friend of mine who's also an author.
And I just read his book recently.
Breath of God. Yeah, it's great. Isn't it? Yeah, this is his first novel, and he did a great job with it. Yeah. He's working on a second one now. I look forward to, but he wrote a very nice blurb about something about this is terrible. I don't like reading my own blurbs. You know that this is awful. Something about me being an authentic voice in Southern writing or something.
Yeah,
it was very nice. And
as Tim said, it's hard for you to brag about your own stuff, but it is a really good book.
Uncomfortable talking about them.
So I wanted to mention that you were on Dr. Tim's show more than a year ago.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And one of the things that I thought was really fascinating was on that interview, you talked about that when you're trying to work out a scene or work out the dialogues, that you actually sit and talk out loud in the voice of those characters to work out kind of the scene or what the dialogue's going to be. How do you work through some of those things, and how does that help you to be able to voice that?
I'm interested to hear David. I'll be glad to answer that question, and I want to hear what David actually has to say about that. It's what I'm about to say, and that is this. I'm fascinated by people that write for a living, that can get up every day and they, you know, get themselves a cup of coffee and sit down, and that's what they do for the next 6 hours, because I'm absolutely the polar opposite of that. mine is much more ebb and flow, right? So I will focus on I think of a book in terms of scenes, like scene of a movie almost. And so I will roll that scene over in my head. I'm not exaggerating. To say hundreds of times is underestimating. It could be thousands of times, literally. And a lot of times it revolves around a piece of music. And that makes it sound like it's all romantical and everything. It's not. One of them's a Kenny Chesney song. And Lady Gaga was in there occasionally, and AC/DC. I mean, there's different songs that.
That's quite a range.
That's what I'm telling you. But they elicit, I guess, different scenes in my mind, and I will listen. I'll get this song. I'll get one of my kids to put it on the iPod gadget thing, and I'll listen to this song 1,000 times, and I will relive this scene in my head 1,000 times. And then periodically, while I'm sitting at an intersection, this is what I was telling Tim, I will have complete entire conversations with characters that are – not in the truck with me. They're just in my head. There's nothing creepy about that.
What an interesting place your head must be.
No, it's fun. It is. So, by the time I sit down to write a chapter, I know that you're wearing a purple shirt with a gray blazer. I know everything. I know what the room, I know the smell of the coffee that's brewing. I know the color, the shade of the lamp, the light bulbs. I know what time of day it is. I know that, he or she just got out of the shower and they're drying their hair, and so they're only hearing every other word that the other person says. I know everything about that scene. And so when I type it, my fingers can't move fast enough. It's just a matter of just bleh, getting it out. And another thing that's interesting is that when I walk away, that takes me an hour, maybe 90 minutes to pound out one chapter. That's it. And then after that's done, and sometimes it takes much less time. I can do it in 20 minutes. But when that's done, I change not 2% of that chapter afterwards. It's done. I don't have to look at it again. I don't have to think about it again. I put it in the done folder and move on to the next thing I'm thinking about. So back to what David was saying, or David was talking about earlier, I'm keen to hear. I'm always fascinated by people that can do this differently than the way I do it, because I only know my own yardstick.
So tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you, and then we'll bring David into the conversation and have him make a comment about that as well.
You know, Tim asked me this question a year ago, and I said, I have absolutely no idea. Call my wife. I don't know. Call David. Someone call David if you want to talk to David.
And
about
you
this.
Know, a year ago it was a David with you as well, and you said
that's
call
right.
David.
Call David Galloway.
We're keeping
that's
it right. easy for now you,
call,
Brian.
Call David Cohen. That's right.
But now you have a website.
I know. It's all very exciting. It's all kinds of fun stuff here. So yes, they can reach me on the website, which is called fewmenlive.com.
Allmendie.com.
It's actually been changed.
Really?
Yes. So the saying is, you know, few men live, but all men die, or all men die, but few men live, that kind of thing.
Fewmenlive.com.
You can go to fewmenlive.com, or you can go to allmendie.com, whichever kind of...
whichever mood you're in.
That's right. It'll get you there. That's right.
Excellent. So, David, do you have any comments?
Well, my first comment is I think somebody needs to write a movie script, because if you're thinking in terms of entire scenes with soundtrack,
now you sound like you sound like Morrison over here. Tim was mentioned this the other day at lunch.
But in terms of my own process, it's actually like almost completely different. Most of my writing is client based. Work, so it's nonfiction, although I like to think it's creative. But I do write some poetry and a few things, a children's story I'm working on and things like that. And I find a lot of discovery in the process. And it's the same thing with a lot of my drawings. I'll maybe start with an idea or a gesture or a line, and then I build from there. And I try to get out of the way of the creative flow. Is when I'm at my best. But occasionally, things sort of pop out and tire. 3 a.m. woke up and had to write a poem down, and that almost didn't change from, you know, that blurting out. In fact, I wrote it on my cell phone, which was on my nightstand. I was like, I had to grab the closest thing, so I'm thumbing away at the keyboard. But yeah, usually it's get into the place where I can kind of let the creativity flow and just see, and it's a discovery pattern. So
it sounds like
a very different creative process.
It sounds like with yours, you kind of work it out on paper, and with Brian, you work it all out in your head before you even put it on paper.
Yeah, but the thing I want to touch on with what David said is that creativity often comes in the middle of a process that is already started.
Mm-hmm.
So I would encourage listeners that are thinking about a book or thinking about something they want to create or write, start.
Yeah.
I know that you don't understand how it's going to look or how it's going to read. I know you don't know how it's going to finish. Start. Because Einstein called it the magic moment. And there are these quirky, funny stories about Albert Einstein showing up at his office half-shaven. Because it would hit him in the most mundane moment of his life when he's shaving or showering or just walking the dog or doing something. And then all of a sudden the problem that he'd been wrestling with hit him. It hit me. I didn't know. I'm working on the sequel now, and mm-hmm. I didn't know what the hook was. I didn't know how to finish it. I didn't know what I couldn't figure out what that one element was. I had several of the chapters written that I wanted to demonstrate, and it hit me after supper. I was cleaning the dishes. And I just put the dishes down, walked over, scribbled down the five or six lines of notes that anchored it in my mind. And as soon as it was on the page, I thought, that's it. That's the thing.
Well, the other the thing that's interesting for me in working with Brian is, as he says, his writing is good, and I didn't have to do much editing with it. But when we look at the themes and we would discuss it, Brian was very open to saying, I see. You know, let's tighten that up or let's jettison that. And he's constantly open to it. It's the mind work, how you do it. I'm running into that struggle. I have a client right now who asks for a weekly report, and I finally had to say to him, I really don't want to tell you what I'm doing every week, because I don't want to write down that when I was out jogging yesterday, you know, or when I was doing this came up, much like what Brian, you know, washing dishes, doing something like that's where I begin to understand what's going on in my clients. It'll bite you anywhere. It's just hard to bill for hours.
Right.
That's
right. Right. Well, and I find in my business, and I'm sure that a lot of entrepreneurs find this, is that I'm interested in a lot of different things, and that pieces of all those different things come together mm-hmm. for different clients mm-hmm. in different projects. And so being interested and fascinated and involved in a lot of different things helps me do my job better, too.
Well, let's pull you in even deeper. You did the layout and design for Brian's book.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Talk about that. Let's have the whole story. Was that a woohoo for
Talk
you?
Talk about Rain Man.
Talk
bless
about
her
Rain
heart.
Man.
Oh, my. I was obsessive about the cover.
Yeah, Brian actually had a very... he had an idea of what he wanted on the cover, and he actually had a couple of photographs that he wanted to explore those photographs on the cover. So he sent those to me in advance, and I had read the book actually a couple of times because I read it in the binder, which my husband was laughing. It's kind of the anti-Kindle because it's a huge binder.
It was the anti-Kindle. It's a 6-inch three-ring binder.
And then I read it in the galley form, and so I had read it a couple of times. So I knew, you know, I knew what the book was, and I knew where it was going. But so when I sent Brian the initial proofs, he called me and he said, "Can we meet? And can you bring your computer? And can I stand over your shoulder?" And I said, "I don't do that for clients."
Absolutely not. No. Said, oh, come on, please.
I said, "All right, for you, I'll do it, but that is not the way that I work with clients." But it was, you know, it actually worked out. It worked out fine because he already knew so specifically what he wanted. So we were just tweaking some little things and, you know, changing it from Brian Johnson to Robert Brian Johnson and, you know, moving a headline down. And so it was, you know, we had enough of it done that process worked. But I don't do that for clients
and
generally.
And wasn't it during that session that he also wound up writing some things for you?
Well, while we were in the midst of going back and forth proofing his book, I was working on another project that I needed to write some dialogue for some stories, and I had never done that. So I said, "Hey, how do you write dialogue?" So he told me, you know, gave me some suggestions, and he said, "If you want, I'll help you with that." I'm like, "Yes, that would be awesome." So that was really fantastic that I was able to, you know, kind of get the stories down with the dialogue in place and send it to him, and he made it way better. Mm-hmm. You know, he kind of juiced it up and really sent it back in a much better form than what I was able to do. And I was like, it opened my eyes to say, wow, this is really the difference between somebody just starting out to write dialogue and somebody that's been doing it and how much stronger it can be. So,
you know, as I sit here and look around the room again, I'm reminded of what an amazing set of guests we have with each of you, David and Brian, having your unique backgrounds, but you've taken those and gone off in other ways to find that creativity within yourselves. I always get excited about the shows that we do, whether you're doing them or I've got them, but I think one of the things we consistently show is that our guests come in and they may have started down road A and found B along the way and really came out blossoming. And that's what you both would encourage people on that.
Absolutely. And that thing I was talking about with context before, I think, look at your life that way. I have a friend who used to work for me years ago when we had the startup, and he was a great guy, but he just, for various reasons, wasn't thriving in that environment. And he realized it, took himself out, actually moved down to Florida, rearranged his career. He's written 12 books now.
Oh, my.
You know, he was a fish in the wrong pond is what I like to say. It wasn't that it was a big fish, small pond kind of thing. He was in the wrong pond. He changed his context, gave him room to explore the things that he valued, and he just exploded. I mean, it was so beyond blossoming, and it was just great to see.
Well, and I love what you talked about earlier about, you know, with the whole idea of awful to awesome is you have to decide what awesome looks like for you.
Absolutely.
And it may look different for you than it looks for the majority of other people.
Yeah, and it's tough. You know, a lot of folks, when they start a business on their own, you know, they're hungry for knowledge and they'll seek out sources. And sometimes they forget to include important information when they're asking those sources for advice. They forget to lay out on the table what's really important to them. And people are awesome, and they will give you advice, and it will be generally very well-meant advice, but if it doesn't include something really important to you, it's almost always going to be the wrong advice.
Right.
So if you're out there and you're doing this, be sure to figure out what you want, what you care about, and make that part of the equation. Know what your lines in the sand are, and try to separate out, you know, that pile of things that start with the word the words you should that maybe come from your parents or your education or your old boss or you know, some business book that you read 10 years ago, and make sure that isn't an obstacle to what you really want to accomplish.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm going to put Brian in the place he hates to be, and that's awkward again, you know? But
let's talk about how much I love my book.
That's right. Well, the whole time I'm working with him, he is always saying, do you think it's good enough? Is it really good enough? I've had clients come to me and say, right in the eye, this is going to be a bestseller. Hollywood wants my book. And when I hear that, I have to control my gag reflex.
Right.
Brian never brought that up. I kid you not, I think that this can be a bestseller and that it could be an amazing movie. It is that good.
And I can't wait for the sequel. I'm so excited about what the people are going to be doing in the next book. So
I agree. I am very, very uncomfortable with this conversation. Tim was absolutely right. Now, I am working on the sequel, and the sequel is entitled Wahoo.
I knew.
The Genius of Humans Being.
So the book, if people want to know more about Wahoo, they just have to read this first book and be ready for the second one.
Into the Black, yeah. Into the Black. Was there a question? Did I miss the question?
No.
Sorry, I'm still sweating over here from Tim talking about my book.
We're trying to promote you, that's all.
He's still in that awkward.
Yeah. And as someone who works with people around personal branding, I am not an advocate for modesty. It's a noisy world.
You're going to have an interesting time.
This is the greatest book since the Bible. You need to read this book.
Is that better? There's a difference between bragging and letting people know you're there and that you've got a message.
Now, you know, earlier on, you're using branding, David, got me going. You know, Brian said he'd sit in the truck with his dad and see these guys in their jeans and mucking about in the mud.
Right.
This guy shows up in slacks and sport coat and boots, and I keep saying to him, I thought you were a contractor. He said, I am, but my wife told me.
My wife dresses me. Yeah, that's right. My wife's a corporate lawyer. She dresses me, though.
Okay, I have to tell you a funny story. When one of the times that Brian and I were meeting at Atlanta Bread Company, mm-hmm. we had been there for probably 45 minutes, and this gentleman came up to the table and gives Brian his business card and said, you dress really well. If you ever need to buy clothes, give me a call.
That's right. And it wasn't too far long after he left that Vanessa said, you do realize he was hitting on you, right? I was like, what?
He threw the business card away.
Yeah, I gave it to the next guy. Yeah, that's right. This guy wants to talk to you.
Well, David, do you know when you have him scheduled?
It was February, I want to say
2017.
Sometime in February.
Yeah, that's right.
The reason I raised that is I think the interview with the two of you is just going to be phenomenal. I'm going to make a point of listening to it. This is Mr. Laid Back up against Mr. Corporate, and this is going to be fun.
That's right. Well, Tim, I can't believe it, but our time is our clock is running out.
The clock is on us. That's the phrase. The clock is on us. It does that every week.
It's been such a fun interview, though. It's hard to make it stop. So. But here we are. It's time for us to close up. And we welcome your comments and suggestions about content and about our guests. If you'd like to recommend a guest or be a guest yourself on Right Here, Right Now, let us know. Send us an email, whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com. Thank you, Dr. Tim, for letting me join you in the studio today.
Oh, I should thank you for letting me come in. It's been great.
It was fun. And thank you, Kevin, for co-hosting and trying to keep us on track anyway. It was kind of a challenge today. And thank you to our guests, David Cohen and Robert Brian Johnson. David, can you share your contact information again?
Absolutely. Find me at equationarts.com or follow me on Twitter at David S. Cohen, and I'd be happy to see you there.
Excellent. And Brian, your contact information.
Yeah, you can reach me via the website if you want to talk about writing, and that's at fewmenlive.com. Or if you want me to build something for you, you can go to jcat@gcm.com.
Excellent. Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services. Learn more about Right Choice Services and how they help individuals write the book that they've always wanted to write at rightchoiceservices.com. I hope you'll join us next week. Tell your friends about the show. In fact, send them an email right now to invite them to listen live or to the downloads. Right Here, Right Now broadcasts live every Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern at righthererightnow.businessradiox.com. And the MP3 version will be available later today. I'm Vanessa Lowry. Join us next week when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business. Right here, right now.